Hello, and thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to JF Bartholomew, who has agreed to be the first thought leader interview subject for IRI's new digital transformation community. I'm Lee Green with IRI, and I run our strategic initiatives. The DXC, or Digital Transformation Community of Organization, is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. Through the DXC, IRI members can access case studies with fresh, relevant content. The first one actually went live yesterday, and I encourage you to check it out on irispring.com. We have a conference dedicated to digital transformation. That's the Digital Futures Conference, and it's happening in Cleveland, October 14th through the 16th. We also have facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics, updates with insights and additional resources, workshops to take deep dives on shared pain points, and webinar interviews with thought leaders like we are doing today. These will always take place on the third Thursday of the month from 12 p.m. Eastern time. So I encourage you to set up a recurring date on your calendar. Next month, we will be talking to Mike Holman and Matt Wagner from Lux Research about a recent study they did on digital transformation in 38 companies. I'll be sure to sign all of you up to receive updates on the DXC. And if you don't want to receive updates, just let me know. I have a few housekeeping items to get through before we begin our conversation with JF. First, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can either raise your hand using that function on the dashboard, at which point I will unmute you so you can ask your question, or you can type your question in and I will read it out for you. Please bear in mind that JF will not be able to answer all questions. And without further ado, I would like to introduce Dr. JF Bartholomew. He's currently on special assignment with the Office of the Chief Technologist at NASA HQ as Agency Digital Transformation Lead. He is responsible for assessing the state of the agency's digital transformation initiatives and to recommend how to effectively integrate all of those diverse initiatives. Prior to that assignment, JF was the NASA Langley Research Center, or LARC, Chief Technologist since January 2015. He advised the LARC Office of the Director and Senior Staff on Technology Matters and provided technical leadership for planning, management, and evaluation of comprehensive center-wide technology development activities. Prior to that, JF was the Deputy Director of the LARC Systems Analysis and Concept Directorate, and then of the LARC Office of Strategic Analysis, Communication, and Business Development. Right. To kick things off, JF, can you please tell us about your current special assignment?
Well, thank you, Lee, glad to be talking to you today. I'm really looking forward to sharing the lessons we've learned, and then also to get input, and looking forward to hopefully meeting some of you at the event in October. So about 2 years ago, senior staff at the agency basically commissioned the Office of Chief Technologist to look at where we stood from with respect to digital transformation, and whether there were some recommendations that they needed to consider. And a number of us kind of set out basically visiting the different installations. We call them centers, but we have about 10 installations around it. Around the country. So we went around visiting them and basically looked for examples of successful digital transformation and try to identify as well needs that those organizations would help identify. At the same time, what we did also is we benchmark a number of different companies, some with whom we work regularly, but then some a bit outside of our domain, just to get a good cross-section of what's going on. One of the first things we had to do is to define for ourselves what digital transformation was all about. And so we eventually, after a number of iterations, converged on really the notion of re-engineering or reinventing the processes, products, and capabilities that support our mission and mission support efforts. You would call those business minds, you know, in the private sector. And it's not only enabled by digital technologies, although that's clearly central, but also enabled by an innovation culture, enabled by a digital savvy workforce, and in addition to those technologies. So what we learned on that journey, actually digital transformation is happening just about around the entire agency. Individual teams, certainly at the working level, the individual team or project level, bringing many up-to-date digital technology to bear in solving their problem. In fact, we started out with a short list of what we thought were key digital transformation technologies and found out that just about every one of them was experimented with at least somewhere in the agency. What we also found is that a lot of those development are siloed because they are implemented bottoms up. Individual solutions don't necessarily integrate. And some of the work, frankly, is duplicative. Some lessons learned are not always shared. So what we have not been able to identify is many enterprise-wide solutions, digital solutions for the enterprise. In addition to that, we found a very wide distribution of skills. We have folks who are certainly national expert in their area of digital transformation, but we also have many on our staff who are really not totally aware of the benefit they could derive from introducing some of those newer technologies in their day-to-day lives.
Okay, so what examples of digitalization have you seen across NASA in all of your work?
So you know, we went out and surveyed a different organization. I think we came across something like 200 different examples of what we would consider bona fide digital transformation. But just to give you some examples, and let me talk to all of us here, is, as you know, one of the aspects of the work of NASA has to do with astronomy and discovering of new worlds and new planets. One of our observatory, which is a satellite called Kepler, has been looking for habitable planets, and the way it does that is essentially it tracks the change in brightness of different stars that it observes. The point is, however, if those observations, not all of them represent the passage of a planet in front of a star, and so how to decipher, how to identify which ones are credible planetary crossing and which ones are not. I mean, it started with something on the order of 1 trillion data points, and you certainly cannot examine all of those. So they brought together high-performance computing and artificial intelligence and machine learning to actually reduce that number to something that's much more manageable on the order of 4,000, something that you could never have done if you had done it manually. You've had a human in the loop. So that's one example. Another example, NASA is actually involved in doing development for the air traffic control of the future, and we've basically used agile development practices to rapidly and iteratively develop software for collaborative air traffic management, which is essentially having several different controllers from different facilities controlling traffic at the same time, it was quite successful because we were able actually to demonstrate it in flight, and I think that we were able to develop it fairly quickly, and we were able to demonstrate that in flight. Now, the digital transformation is not only about the mission work that we have, but it's also our mission support, and so we have, for example, an organization that has basically revolutionized the way they onboard workforce. They typically, this is a process that can last a week before the time somebody signs in and somebody gets all the access to all the systems that they need to get access to. And by basically digitalizing a lot of the processes, use web-based application, they were able to reduce that to less than a day. From the time somebody checks in, gets to meet their new supervisor, and get issued security, credentials and the necessary IT hardware, and all of that is because it's digital based. We have other examples. For example, on our IT security side, we have been able to do data fusion to and visual data fusion essentially to integrate together different stream of security data and from different sources and then fuse them in real time in a common model, a common picture, so that our analysts can develop some situational awareness and then make make decision based on data. Database inside. So we really have example across the range of all the function that we carry out at NASA.
Oh, that's great. So what was the biggest success story of all the ones that you saw?
Well, I don't know that we necessarily ranked them all, but I have to tell you one that really impressed me. Has to do with what we call EVA suits, and EVA is extravehicular activity suits. So that's essentially the suits that the astronauts are using while in space, whether it's outside of the space station or as well looking towards the future on the surface of the moon or Mars. And when you think about it, those suits are actually pretty complex. We think of them as spacecraft, individual spacecraft, and not only are they spacecraft because they have so many different complex systems on board, but not only are they spacecraft, but they're human rated spacecraft because obviously there's a human inside, and they have to be reusable, which is not typical of spacecraft, at least not the ones that we develop typically. So back in 2013, we actually had in the course of an EVA, so an extra vehicular activity, one of our astronauts almost drowned because of unexpected accumulation of water in his helmet. And there was a board that was set up, and it was quite striking that once people started looking at the data, it took them about 3 man-months to gather all the data that was available on this particular instance. And that was because the data was distributed both, and the data was in both analog and digital format, believe it or not. But then also, the data was in very different locations. Some belonged to NASA. Some actually belonged to some of our contractors that we collaborated with. And so when they went through the effort of pulling all that data together, they actually came to the conclusion, and that was the first time that all that data had been integrated. They came to the conclusion that, in fact, there was a risk that they hadn't been tracking. There was a risk that one could have picked out of that data had we had it all together, that they had never tracked in this particular event they were unaware of. And so one of the recommendations of the board is that that we develop an integrated system that give access to the integrated set of data that has to do with suits. And that's not only data about the individual parts, but it's also results of modeling and simulation. That's also data that's gathered during refurbishment and so on and so forth. And so right now, as a result of that particular event, we've developed a fully integrated data system that we are using regularly to manifest a new suit for an upcoming mission. So actually we're using that integrated system for planning the design of new suits, and again, as we're going back to the moon and then and Mars eventually. So this caused us to create a capability that was much broader than what we initially looked at to create to do the analysis. And actually, more than that, that particular system is generic enough that we are actually we're considering seriously using a different line of business. In this particular case, we have an application in aeronautics that could benefit from this development, this integration, this capability to integrate and interrogate data in a from a central fashion. So I find that one of the most, one of the examples that speaks to me the most.
Oh, great. So what are the most common challenges that you've come across the agency?
Well, one of the things, when we set out to do this, and I pointed out you pointed out that actually we are part of the Office of Chief Technologies. And I think we started the process thinking, what are those technologies that we need to incorporate in digital transformation? And I think that was the wrong way to start. And I think it took us a while to realize that this is not about pushing, it's not so much about pushing new digital technologies on existing processes, really. It's really about standing back, looking at the entire business or the entire mission of the agency, understanding, and then understand how we can take advantage of the convergence of those technologies. And that may imply taking very radically different approaches at what we do. And so one of the implications of that is that you may end up having to be disruptive in the process to make the most of those new capabilities that are available. That took us a while, but that's a message we heard loud and clear as we went around the agency. And another challenge is that, and I'm sure it's just, in a way, it's similar for all of us around the table here, is that we're mission-driven, right? I mean, we're not about digitally transforming. We are about going to the moon and Mars. We're about understanding the Earth. We're about transforming aviation, right? So digital transformation is about transforming, as I indicated, product, process, and capabilities, but without impeding delivery on our missions. And we joke among ourselves that it's really about building the plane while you are flying it, right? And so you want to transform process, product, and capability without missing a beat. Another message we heard loud and clear is that at the end of the day, this will be about change. And so it intrinsically kind of challenges much in our human nature. When we're already solving what you feel is a complex problem, you may feel like it's excessive at the same time to have to change your tool set to do that, because you're not really comfortable with the approach, and you may not be comfortable with the outcome. And I think one message also we heard loud and clear in the process is that as you transform, you have to do that securely. And there is a bit of a paradox, because digital transformation is at its core making data available to many. And and I'm sure that we are, just like everybody around the table, we're constant targets of security hacks. So we have to do that transformation, make that data available to all. And that means inside of NASA and outside of NASA, without incurring additional security risk. Now, the good news is, as you transform, you actually have an opportunity to build, bake in security, as we say. So there is a positive side to that, but it's certainly something we have to remain mindful of.
So as you spoke about the technology, so what ones did you see that were implemented that actually brought value? And then the flip side, what ones didn't live up to the hype?
So, as I said, we kind of tracked maybe 15 different technology categories. But I think the first one to me that's striking is cloud computing, and it's definitely an enabler of for the mission. We are in the business of collecting data. It's mostly scientific, but we also have a lot of engineering data that we collect, and we have scientific data, operations data, engineering data, business data. And to give you an example, we have a facility called the Earth Observing System Data and Information System, and it collects 6.5 terabytes of data every day. Okay, and it's only a small part of what we are collecting. So we have to be able to archive that data, and then we have to be able to understand it. And we have to be able to serve it, because it's really a lot of that data is data that we need to make available to the public. So we've been on the cloud in many ways, and actually I haven't been able to check that for a fact, but I know some said that we prototyped the cloud before it really was a commercial product. So at this point, we're really heavy user of commercial cloud services, but we also have homegrown cloud. Second category really builds on the first one. Really, it's artificial intelligence, machine learning, and we use it now to, for example, look through the 10 terabyte of data that we get from the Hubble Space Telescope. We are using it. We're about to launch a new robot for Mars. We call that mission Mars 2020, we're not going to be using it to basically plan the itinerary, the task schedule for the robot, and then to autonomously drive the robot. Currently, this is really done by hand. I mean, we have a team of engineering scientists to get together day after day and do that planning. And we're counting artificial intelligence and machine learning to do that with the next robot. One thing that's closer to my organization is that we've used it to actually sift through the mountains of scientific data and publications that are out there. And fairly recently, we've used that in the area of space radiation, which is a big challenge as we're thinking about going beyond low Earth orbit, but also autonomous flight and space mission analysis. As we think about going to the moon, we're developing capability to have essentially what we call Duck in a Box, which is AI, artificial intelligence driven system that will help us diagnose medical condition during, you know, deep space exploration mission when access to a doctor in real time is not always possible. And then we use it in our day-to-day life to automate some of the processes that we use, whether it's mission support or mission. Now, you know, you ask the question, is what has not lived up to the hype? I'm not sure I want to have a definite statement on that. Maybe it's a bit risky. But we are experimenting with a number of technologies that really, so far, are not yet ready for prime time, at least not for us. We are experimenting seriously with blockchain application in systems engineering in particular. We're also experimenting with quantum computing to accelerate primarily the work we do in modeling and simulation. But at this point, this is very much at the experimental level. We have not incorporated those in our day-to-day processes because they haven't yet made a case for that.
So in all of this, what skill sets among the staff have you come across that have been most useful?
Well, you know, we have one sub team that works with us that's looking at workforce and culture, and we're looking forward to their recommendation in terms of skills that we really ought to emphasize. But so my take is ironically, I think one of the first set of skills that you need is you need to be able to understand the business, right? The business, the business of the agency of exploration of science, and really what our stakeholders need, and then you need to put together how different elements of the enterprise work together. What are the pain points? What are the technologies that we have to resolve those? So, ironically speaking, I think my vote would go for the generalist. It's a person who understands the totality of the business and what's needed, and then the potential of key solutions. And then after that, also a single skill that I think will help us kind of chart our way is that of enterprise architect, right? So it's a person who will be able to start from where we are and based on the strategy, the enterprise strategy, can envision the lines of where we should be going and what are the digital solution, and can help us draw the lines between what we have and what we need to acquire. Now, more logically and more intuitively, I think one that's really critical for us is a data scientist. And we have some, but I think the demand far outstrips the supply that we have. We want professionals who can look at scientific or technical or business data, can clean it up, can enhance it, can organize it, and then analyze it to extract, insightful technical results or business data. And then one that I discovered fairly recently is actually the citizen developer. And the citizen developer is really every one of us. It's the practitioner of whether we have a technical or a business function. And now we have at our hand a set of powerful toolboxes and computer environment which really permit us to develop our own custom digital processes so that we can solve, you know, address our function better, right? And so everyone at the agency, and I think it's a pretty general statement, is going to have to be up on the latest tools that are available and how they can, you know, take advantage of those in their day-to-day business.
Okay. So what operational structures have you seen put in place that successfully integrated digital?
Well, I tell you what we are planning on going. As I pointed out earlier, we sampled a number of different organizations, and some were digital nature and native, and clearly, by definition, that was their own structure was one that worked for them, and then some of have the same kind of work like us. We've been around for a while. You know, we've seen any number of different approaches from having a very large organization that actually is tasked with doing enterprise transformation, has some resources, and then works collectively with the business lines. And then we've seen others where there is a very small, very small cadre of people who are basically tasked to making sure that the work of everybody integrates into a digitally transformed process. And that's kind of what we are advocating for the agency. We're staying away from trying to create a new monolithic DT-centric organization, but we're about helping integrate strategically the existing efforts. As I pointed out before, we've discovered that many people at the agency are already engaged in digital transformation. So for the job is really to integrate it. And so that's the approach that we're taking. And one thing that we know is that whether or not such organization exists, the business line are investing in their tool set. They are investing in their processes. They are investing in maintenance. And so what the job of this small organization is to convince them that they need to take the step to make it wholesale digital transformation where it makes sense for them, right? And we're building from our perspective from the fact that some of our own centers or installation are already doing transformation of one kind or another, and they already have their own local at different levels within the installation, but many of them already have a focal point, if not a full-blown organization, doing transformation. So for us, the job is really one of integration, and to define what would be enterprise trust, strategic trust, and then where necessary policies, if necessary, and then start from that. So,
was there anything that didn't work that you're allowed to share?
Well, I think if I'm looking inward, I'm looking at our own organization. I think, the fact that on the one hand, on the very positive side, we have a number of different projects that have taken their own digital transformation in hand, is something that works and doesn't work. On the one hand, it works because it has enabled them to radically change the way they were doing their work. It's significantly improve either the quality of the result, the speed of the processes, and the availability, the visibility of the process. But at the same time, it doesn't work because if you do that as a collection of individual solution, then you get siloed solution, and then they don't mesh necessarily very well. So what doesn't work is something that's missing the integration capability, right? And so to us, at the end of the day, successful digital transformation is enterprise-wide where it matters. And so we feel strongly about providing that element of integration in the process.
Mm-hmm. So have you seen any successes in working with outside organizations?
Well, by definition, I think the extended workforce of NASA is something like one government employee for five, different organization, contractor organization, and that's really the narrow a narrow view of it because it's even much bigger. So we do work with outside organizations all the time. And so we've done some benchmarking and it's we've identified a number. One thing is certain is that we have all collaborators have come to the conclusion that we need to do this together. And because, you know, because we do exchange data and models and systems. One challenge that has been specific is the ability to collaborate in real time in secure environment. You know, it's fairly straightforward to do it among ourselves, among the organization. I know that it's not yet possible to do it even within the government, that going from agency to agency, whether we work with DOD or NOAA or whatever, you know, collaboration is not straight line. And then it's even more complicated when you have to deal with the private sector, and especially it's even most complicated when you deal with partners that are overseas. In fact, I was given an example where we were working. I don't remember which country it was, but it was in Europe, and the only way we could collaborate is by exchanging hard drives. It's certainly not the most practicable way to do that, right? So collaboration is. It simply the exchange of data and in a secure environment is a challenge. And another one is that we found is that, you know, at the end of the day, what we exchange is scientific models or engineering models. And, you know, whether it's a CAD model or whether it's, is the outcome of a modeling and simulation product. And that we really cannot collaborate around one of those. Unless we either, you know, have to ship gigantic files and it is just not, you know, really that much of a real-time process. And so that's certainly an example where we are lacking in the area of collaboration and that we're pushing on. Now, on the IT side, because of Fuji Digital has a strong IT backbone, we have been involved in a number of different partnerships. Yes, we work closely with the likes of Google and Amazon and NVIDIA and IBM and really looking forward to collaborate even more.
So what's been the role of NASA leadership in the journey so far?
Well, I mean, I'll give them credit for commissioning us for this effort, right? They've shown strong enthusiasm. They've guided us in our deliberation and the development of our recommendations. So we have to come back to them, you know, within the next 6 months with recommendations as to the content of the strategy and roadmaps. And so, you know, they've been supportive. They're just waiting for our recommendation to be issued.
So can you share any of the recommendations that you've made or will be making?
Well, what we've already outlined and we've told them is centers on number one focus. We basically told them, you know, you need to focus on, from our perspective, six different areas. The first one is really data. The data, how do we collect the data and manage the data, distribute the data, protect the data, understand the data. We need to focus then around collaboration. I just made the case that certainly is a major challenge. We need to focus on a model-based approach at system development, which is something that we do a lot of, and you may have heard of model-based systems engineering. Well, actually, Boulder and I'm talking about model-based everything. It's catchy, but it certainly starts from systems engineering. And I have to say that's really rejoined some recommendation from other inside teams. Then work on process automation, and then artificial intelligence and machine learning, and then all of that with a special attention to working the culture and workforce aspect. So we want to focus on those six areas. It doesn't run the whole span of what digital transformation could be all about. And we're not saying that no digital transformation work ought to be outside of that, but we are telling them, you know, if you go at the enterprise level, you really ought to be looking at those for the time being. So that's one. What we also will be recommending is that you need some seed funding because you need to be able to demonstrate early wins. You need to be able to maybe do some benchmarking so that you can assess return on investment and solve limited problems such that you can convince all stakeholders to actually invest in the full-blown development of a complete system to streamline a particular process or create a new process. And then we'll recommend also something around internal communication to make sure we get all the agency generally aligned with the strategic directions. And then based on the input that we get from our workforce team, then we will also make some specific educational recommendation around educational opportunities.
Okay, so what are your next steps then?
Well, it's, you know, I alluded to those six strategic trusts. We're developing a strategic vision for each one of them, and then a more specific and precise time roadmap for each one of them that would spend the next 2 years, and then the timing of government funding would make it such that would permit us to be ready for investing in fiscal year 2021, which is about a year from now. And then, but in the meantime, this year we are looking for investing in a dozen or so visible early win projects that can help bolster the demonstration of the benefit and maybe hopefully some return on investment type of information that then we can present when we come in for in the budget process next year.
Okay. So, thinking about the audience here and the IRI membership, based on what you've learned so far, what recommendations do you have for other organizations on their journeys?
Well, given that we're only 2 years in this focused initiative here, you all have to take this with a grain of salt. But I think personally, the thing that I would do first is take stock of what you had, right? You may find out that you have ongoing efforts to build from. We certainly found that out at the agency. It's a whole lot easier, to start from what you have and highlight some of the successes that you have had rather than present a wholesale transformation plan that would really get senior management concerned about the impact on delivery and whatnot. So it was very helpful for us. It really gave us a solid base to start from. We are recommending to focus. We kind of joke among ourselves that if you wanted to, you could digitally transform everything in sight. You have to be judicious. You do have limited time and resources, and you have processes that actually impact your business much more than others, and that's the one you need to target. One that you read about everywhere that people are talking about digital transformation. It's really you need to involve all the stakeholders from the inception, because that's the only way you can guarantee enduring solution. And in our case, that means it's really a multifaceted conversation between the mission organizations, the one who have the most of the funding and are the ones who are really on task to deliver, but then the installation, the centers, which is where the work happens, and then of course not to forget our Office of Chief Information Officer that really provides the backbone for our IT infrastructure, right? So it's a multi-stakeholder conversation. For us, one thing that we have had to think about is, do you want to do digital transformation top down or do you want to do it bottoms up? And do you want to define a plan from the top and then impose it on the entire organization? Which, if it worked, it could be potentially swifter. Or it would certainly guarantee an enterprise solution. On the other hand, we have had some people who advocate very strongly that it should only happen bottoms up. Because frankly, it's the user on the front line that actually understand the limitation of the processes that they use and probably best suited to at least bring some solution. And that's not, our sense is that it's really both. And we need to engage senior staff in making it clear that they want us, that they understand that we need to transform if we want to remain relevant. We need to transform because the next challenge that we have as an agency, you know, are getting more and more complex and demanding. But then also you have to recognize solutions that have already been, you know, brought up from the ground up. And so you have to have an approach that's both top down and bottoms up. So, neither one of these extreme by itself will function. You really need to, incorporate both the, leadership from the top and lessons and practice and expertise from the working level for the project, from the programs.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to let the audience take a turn now. Thank you. So I'm going to open the floor to questions. right, so as a reminder, if you want to ask a question, you can raise your hand and I'll unmute you. Just make sure you don't have a lot of background noise, or you can type your questions in. So we'll give you a minute or so to do that. And we'll let the poor JF get a drink of water. Everyone's being very polite and not trying to jump over each other to ask questions. All right, we have one from Rajesh Mukherjee from Clorox. Rajesh, I'm going to unmute you here, and you can go ahead and ask your question. Okay, you're unmuted.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for the great interview here. We had a question about model-based approach. Can you explain a little bit more what it is about and give us an example?
Yes, I mean it's we are in the business of developing complete complex missions. Basically, and we start from concept development all the way up to defining the final system at a preliminary at a detailed design level, even using those models to help us in the simulation of the system and to help us predict the response of the system. Well, in the past, and that involves a number of engineering models, right? And perhaps even systems models, and maybe these are models that have to do with mechanics, that have to do with structural analysis, that have to do with fluid mechanics and whatever. The point is that in the past, we've tended to at each phase of the development, from concept development all the way up to operation, to create models that were, I won't say unrelated, but they certainly were not seamlessly evolving from the concept all the way up to the to operations. And so, what model based is endeavoring to do is actually provide this continuous stream. A continuous development from the very early design all the way up to the model you use for tracking operations and predicting behavior and in a continuous manner, such that and what that does require is that for you to have a centralized data and to have relationship between the different discretization of the models that are built in and traceable. And that also requires you to have all your results from simulation modeling and simulation, integrated in the same data environment. And what it does is it guarantees you, consistency throughout the whole development process. But it's a pretty tall order. And so when we talk about model-based approach, it's to be able to organize our development process around a seamlessly evolving model of the system that we want to develop, and it's quite critical again for rapidity of development, for reducing costs, for accuracy of prediction, et cetera, et cetera. Does that help?
Okay, thank you very much.
Does that help?
Yeah, that's a tall order, but thank you so much.
It is indeed, and I think I appreciate you making that comment, because we're making inroads in that area, but to say that we have a complete, continuous, consistent model from beginning to end is certainly not the case. We certainly have a number of different segments of development where we have done a good job at integrating the different elements and being able to provide that traceability between different steps. So yes, it's a tall order, indeed.
All right, we've had another couple questions come in that were typed in, so I'll read them out. The first is from Les McIntosh from Arkema, and his is, how do you address educating and creating buy-in at all levels?
Oh, it's easy, right? Well, it's really interesting. Believe it or not, as we visited the different organizations within the agency and as we benchmark, we were not very far into the conversation before that topic came up, right? And so I think from a buy-in, you have to do that at all the different levels. So my sense, we're quite fortunate is that leadership of the agency is very much in favor of transforming in general, and digital transformation in particular. They realize it's fairly existential. And so, you can engage them, and we engage them, we have engaged them, we'll continue engaging them at providing a message of the need for transformation and the urgency for transformation. And so, some of our organizations have actually gone as far as adding an element of digital an element of transformation in general in senior executive performance plan. I mean, basically asking the senior executive reporting to them, what have you done for transformation this year, with the idea that, by making it clear that that's a senior management perspective, then people are responsive to that. From the perspective of the the workforce in general, I think it's a combination. We're very fortunate, right? Because at the working level, we've got a fairly recent graduate coming in, and they are digital natives. And so, in fact, they are actually a major impetus behind digital transformation, because they come in with the culture, with the tools and the knowledge that's required to actually implement digital solutions. So they are kind of pushing from the bottom, and then of course senior management is making the direction clear. So the challenge is really for the middle manager who really has a tough job. Number one, being responsible for delivering on the mission, and both incorporating the new tools. So this is where I'm looking to those early wins, to make a case that actually they will get some benefit from that, because that's the question they naturally will ask, right? What is it that I'm gaining from this? I've seen the impact that some of those initial development have made on middle management. When you show them that there is a benefit there, they would absorb it as long as they see it to be feasible. Now, from an educational standpoint, there are plenty of opportunities of different kinds, right? We have done formal, almost semi-academic programs. In fact, we have one that's actually running right now, if I'm not mistaken, on artificial intelligence and machine learning. And also, it turns out that in digitally transformed world, there are plenty of opportunities outside to do digitally transformed education. So that we find that there are a number of opportunities there. But as I indicated before, we're kind of looking for our workforce working group to come back to us to help us set what are some of the priorities. Where is it that that really we need to bring some up-to-date education to the workforce. So we're not clear there yet.
All right. And I would just like to put a plug in as well for the case study that I referenced earlier. It's of Michelin, and there's actually a section on that as well. That literally just came out. It went live yesterday afternoon. And I'm sending emails out with links to everyone. So have a look at that, and that might have some insights too. I think we have time for one more question. And that's from William Petrosi with Boeing, and it's, which skill sets or career experiences have proven most useful within a digital transformation implementation project?
So I did talk earlier about the generalist and the data scientist and the individual individual developer. I think one of the one that I've seen that had the most impact, and I don't know how, I'm not sure you teach that one, but it's, the receptivity to innovation, right? You've got this series of tools on the one hand, you have this process that you've been exercising for years, and it's the matching of those tools in creative way to the process such that, and the ability to transform the process that you still get the result and maybe more. And so than what you had initially, but taking advantage of those new tools. So the ability of being able to translate the capability that are at your fingertip and completely change the way you're doing what you're doing. And so, yeah, it's innovation and creativity.
All right. Well, thank you all for your questions. And again, a big thank you to JF for kicking off our thought leader interview series and being our guinea pig. Remember to join us on October 17th for our next interview. That's going to be with Flux Research. And I would also like to do one more quick plug for the IRI Digital Futures Conference. And that's October 14th to the 16th. And it's in partnership with Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. JF is actually going to be on a panel there, along with others leading the charge in digital transformation. So again, a big thank you to JF for taking the time today to speak to us. And I hope to see you all next month. Thank you.
Thank you.